Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Talk Jet. It is my pleasure to take you to Phoenix, Arizona, where we're going to meet Joshua Smith, a 32-year-old realtor that got his license in 2005, sold 48 homes his first year, sold over 300 homes last year, and is on track to double that this year. I'm going to encourage you to grab a Red Bull, put on your seatbelt, and be prepared to listen to this interview for the first time, because I know you're going to want to listen to it more than once. It's my pleasure to introduce you to Joshua Smith.
Well, Joshua, welcome. And how is everything in Arizona today, man? Give us kind of a little update. What's going on in your market?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And thank you for having me. I'm really stoked to be here today. And as far as our marketplace, man, it's been kind of a wild ride. You know, I got my license in 2005, and it's just been just a roller coaster. You know, there's been no steadiness to the marketplace. We started recovering, about 2 years ago from the bottom of the market, about 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
Then we just had, we had crazy appreciation. It went from, 2005, 2006 crazy appreciation to crazy depreciation. And then, it just spiked right back up. We appreciated about 60%.
Wow.
With a 2 year span. And then, now we're back in the decline though, about seven months ago, it just came to a halt, which was good. I mean, we had, 6 months ago, we had the lowest inventory in recorded history of Phoenix, of Maricopa County. I mean, we were down about a month and a half, worth of inventory, and now we're climbing pretty rapidly. We're about 6 months worth of inventory every single month. We're, you've got about 10,000 to 11,000 homes being listed on a monthly basis, and only about 6,000 selling.
Yeah.
One more time.
10,000 to 11,000 being listed every month, and only 6,000 selling.
Correct. Yep.
Wow.
So we're going back into a buyer's market very fast, and. The correction was kind of, I don't know if it was a false correction or not, but we'll see where it lays. But to me, and it may sound weird and twisted, but I like buyer's markets. I've always done much better in buyer's markets. We've always not just survived, but thrive in seller markets as well. However, in seller markets, the value of a realtor isn't needed as much as it is, in today's market. In a hardcore seller's market with inventory like that, you can sell your home yourself or hire, your cousin or your buddy that's a realtor, and they'll do it for nothing, throw a sign in the yard and sell. Now sellers need a realtor, and buyers as well need a realtor that can go out there, get the job done, negotiate market very aggressively, and, our services are now needed again.
In that opening, whatever that was, 90 seconds, I think what people are going to hear is there was a great definition I read recently of selling, and it says selling is the transferring of enthusiasm from one person to another. If you have anything, it's a whole lot of enthusiasm, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You're an enthusiastic guy, and so I need to tell everybody up front how we got to know each other, which is all virtual. Up until this moment when we're talking, it's all been through social media, and I watch you and connect with you on social media. I've made some comments to you about open houses, and you've got some brilliant posts that you've done, one with a sort of an average, typical, house that you might see in Phoenix with a sandwich board sign in the driveway, and then there's yours with the wrapped Hummer and the flags blowing in the breeze, man, and it's like, this guy's staging an event. This is the way you hold open houses. This is how you sell real estate. So with all that said, I'm really fired up to talk to you. And the only thing that I want to sort of create up front is an awareness of your volume. So can you take us back maybe the last 3 years, Joshua, and just kind of give us a framework? I get that you've been in a crazy, crazy market. Phoenix is, I think ever since all this California investment money came into Arizona, whenever that was, 10, 15 years ago, it's all been a little off kilter. But all that said, take us back about 3 years and paint the picture.
Yeah, so the last few years, it's been pretty steady for me, even though the market's you know, been doing some crazy things. I'm a huge believer that you've got to be able to whip out that blank piece of paper and reinvent yourself every single day. And nice. Know that, you know, you mentioned the open houses, and I'm a big believer in you just take massive, massive levels of action. And I don't believe at all for, I mean, not for a second, that there's such a thing as a bad market. It's always a good market for somebody.
Yeah.
You know, so for us, it's, you know, I started my team in 2006. I got licensed in 2005. You know, kind of hit it right out the gate, sold 48 homes my first year, just went out there, just sheer hustle muscle, had no idea what I was doing, but just grinding hard, you know, going out. I'd go to Home Depot and I'd say, okay, I'm not leaving. I'm not going to go have dinner with my family until I've handed out 300 cards, you know, had X amount of conversations and set an appointment, you know. And, and then, you know, within 12 months, it got to the point where, because back then in the organization I was with, I had no idea what a team was, you know, where people weren't really doing teams, right? So, but I got to a point where I was like, okay, I hit a ceiling. I knew, I mean, I was working from 4 a.m. till essentially midnight every single day, and I knew unless I delegated something, I could never grow. And I knew I wanted to grow, and just, you know, one of those things for me is I'm going to continue growing until the day I die, right? So, so I knew at that point I had to delegate, so then I hired my first assistant, and then within a couple months, got to the point where I couldn't work with any buyers. I was 3-4 weeks booked out with buyers. So then, you know, I hired my first buyer's agent, and it kind of, you know, snowballed from there. So I started a team back in 2006, and I really feel I've been so blessed to get my license at the best time, at least here in Phoenix, you know, really in recorded history for real estate, in that in the last 9 years I've been doing this, I've seen shifts in markets that most people don't get experience in a whole entire career. Mm. And it's allowed me to grow and adapt and fail, you know, fail on a massive level in a lot of different ways to be able to reflect and learn and grow. And I've been able to just kind of reinvent my team and myself so many times to figure out what works and what doesn't work. You know, the point now, so the last 5 years straight, we haven't done under 40 million. You know, been kind of bouncing between 40, 50 million the last 3 years. And last year was our biggest year at 51 million. And now that the marketplace is kind of out of the short sale.
How many units is that, Joshua, just to give people a framework?
Okay, yeah, 320 units last year.
320, wow.
Yep. So, and this year we're on track right now to double that. So,
great.
You know, this year's you know, we've really you know, the whole saying you fire bullets until you get it down and then you start firing cannonballs. Well, we fired enough bullets, so we figured we got it down, and you know, now we're you know, again taking that massive level of action and then growing very rapidly and adding a lot of team members and like I said, on track to double our production from last year.
It's great, man. That is great. Well, those are just phenomenal numbers, and you had done this in a very short period of time. There's no doubt, and I know we talked a little bit before we started recording about, you know, are you Josh, are you Joshua, and you know, it brings up the whole question about age. So let me ask you, man, how old are you right now?
So I'm 32.
32 years old.
Yep, got in the business at 23 and 32 now, so.
And what did you do before? There wasn't a whole lot of before, but I got to ask, what were you doing before real estate?
Yeah, so I, you know, I was in health clubs. My father owned and operated health clubs for 30 years.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I grew up. I was blessed to be able to grow up and see, you know, in a small business environment, and you know, get the sense of what it really takes to run a small business. And watching my father work 80 hours a week, and see the back ends and ins and outs. And so, you know, my whole entire life since I was 11 years old, you know, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, work for myself and be an entrepreneur. And so I remained in the health club business. My father retired when I was 18. He got out of the health club business, and I went on and worked for some other locations as a district sales manager of 5 sales teams for Powerhouse for a short period of time, and you know, did some stuff there. But I realized, hey, until I'm actually the owner and doing that, I was never happy just working for somebody else. And and I knew that I could create the opportunity that I wanted to create for my future until I got into ownership. Well, at 23 years old, you know, it's tough to to start my own health club at the time was going to cost what I wanted to create was going to cost $800,000. And at 23 years old, I was seen as a huge risk. So it was tough to raise the capital and get the capital and get investors to buy into it. So I got into real estate as a stepping stone. You know, I thought, okay, hey, you know, I'm going to real estate, just go out there and work my butt off, make a bunch of money, just hoard some cash, and then, you know, then go out there and open my own health club. And then what I realized through all this is I'm 10 times more passionate about real estate, and I love the health club industry, but I found my true love with real estate. And you know, I get people all the time that say, oh, you're so passionate about this business. I'm like, dude, that's the biggest understatement on the planet. This is my passion. This is my obsession. You know, this is this is what I live, eat, and breathe. You know, it's like when I get told on vacation, I'm like, dude, I am vacationing every day that I'm working a damn grind. I go on vacation. I'm stressed out, bro. I'm going to be back here doing this. You know, this is my love. So
nice, man. Well, it's like I said, there's no shortage of enthusiasm or passion with you. And I love that because I think it fires everybody else up as they're listening to you right now. Funny little side note for anybody that's listening to this. And by the way, Joshua, the vast majority of people that hear these interviews are top producing realtors because mortgage lenders subscribe to the Talk Jet series. They're the ones that distribute them. And if you think about it, they're not going to be giving them to average agents that are selling, you know, 6, 10, 12 homes a year. They're going to be taking these out to either existing partners or people that they want to work with that are doing a lot of volume. So you're talking to top producers right now across the country, and each month it's estimated to be about 8,000. So as you think about that, you know, for those of you that are listening that are building teams, you may have seen this pattern before, but that health club thing, dude, that is a fertile territory to recruit from. I've got three clients I can think of right now, coaching clients, that are just exceptional. I mean, next to maybe special operations, you know, warriors, Navy SEALs, Army Rangers, that come out of that environment and get into this environment and say, you know, I grew up knowing what my goals were, exactly what I knew needed to do every day. I was scripted. It was a very controlled environment, and it was an easy thing to get fired up about. So would you agree that's kind of an interesting transition into real estate?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the general public may have a different perception on what the health industry is. However, when you're in the sales, in the health club industry, for example, there'd be days where I wouldn't step on the sales floor. You know, you're back in the office, mandated to get out the phone book, and it's 100 cold calls every single day, filling out your call sheets. You know, you learn to accept and enjoy and like rejection very, very quickly. The majority of your sales happen through referrals based on your current members. So you're used to working the sales floor, working your members, asking for referrals all day long. You're used to working 12, 14, 16-hour days. And then as far as the goal setting, you know, before I got into sales, when I first was in the health club industry, I first was really passionate about personal training. So it was all about goal setting, discovering, you know, when I was working with clients, and now I carry that over to my team members, you know, the most successful clients were the ones that we were able to really identify their why, their purpose. You know, why are you coming in? What is your why? And then setting hardcore goals with that, and then that daily accountability piece. And that's actually how we refer to ourselves now when we bring on team members, because I don't actually sell anymore. I just sell my team sales. And I tell them when you're joining this organization, hey, we're the personal trainers of real estate. You know, we're going to push you to a level you've never been pushed before. There's going to be more accountability. There's going to be more training, coaching than you've ever had in your lifetime. And if that scares you, okay, then don't join the organization. But that's what we're all about. You know, you have daily sheets you got to turn. We treat it just the same. You know, like, for example, today and about every quarter, we do this with the team right before I jumped on this call. We finished our team meeting, and we make everybody, tell the group, hey, what's your why? So the two questions I ask is, what's the one thing personally that productivity in real estate creates for you? Mm. You know, what's that one thing? You know, maybe it's, I really want to send my kids to private school, which is going to cost an additional $20,000 a year. I need $100,000 to pay my bills. So we're looking at about $120,000 that I must make. Now, it's no longer a should. It becomes a must. Mm-hmm. It's on their goal sheet. And then now that's what we're focusing on. And so when I'm asking them, hey, how many homes are you closing this month? My question to them is, you know, how are you doing on that private school for your kids? You know, I want to tap into that emotional why and you know, getting that hardcore purpose. And one of the questions I get more often than anything is, dude, how do you get up at 3:30 a.m.? How are you so energetic, motivated, pumped up? you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, look, you know, it's because I have such massive freaking goals that I want to accomplish while I'm here on this planet. My goals and my purpose and my vision are so large and so crystal clear that I hate sleep. I hate having to eat or sleep because it just gets in the way, you know. So when people I hear burnout or lack of motivation, first thing I go do is identify what their goals are. I don't believe in burnout. I believe that you don't have big enough goals. You're not crystal clear on your vision, your purpose in this life. If you're you know, crystal clear on what you want out of this world, you got a hardcore big purpose and massive goals, motivation will never be a problem in your world.
Yeah, totally, totally. That's a beautiful way to put it. And you address the issue of, for those people that are listening right now that have teams, you know, there's always this motivation argument that goes back and forth. Can you motivate people? And I'm of the school that you can't. You can create an environment where people can motivate themselves. But what you're doing by identifying the why, what their why is, and those two examples are great. You know, private school at 20 grand, and I got to pay my bills 100, so I got to make 120 plus this year. Rather than you coming in as a leader saying, what are you doing to help us reach our goals? What you're doing is you're connecting it to their why, which is something very personal for them, right?
Yeah, so people don't care about my goals. They don't care about your, you know, they care about what's their own personal goals. So, and this is just one of those areas where you learn and you grow and you fail. And, you know, you go back to the drawing board, and I used to set goals for my team members. Mm-hmm. What I found, though, you know, at that point, I mean, there's no buy-in there. There's no goals
right. Must
be your own.
Right.
You know, so our goal is, and you're right, you can't motivate people. You create a culture, though, that inspires them to motivate themselves, right?
Totally.
So, yeah, so we're just diving into that hardcore. I want them to set all of their own goals, their own commitments. You know, we have a culture that keeps everybody accountable, but they set their own. You know, so now they're on their own. And that's just our meeting. Hey, how are you doing on this? And, you know, what we find is everybody always meets their must. All your musts in the world. Now, the difference between, you know, winners and losers is winners make all their shoulds, all those things that we know we should be doing, they now are their musts, where losers just have a huge list of shoulds and a very small list of musts. Well, we want them to get that crystal clear picture of in their head of what they must accomplish. And just, you know, little things, power of language, we tie into that. But now we want that as their must, and then we have them review it daily, and then so all of our conversations are based on that and their why and what they must be doing and must be performing at in order to live that lifestyle and accomplish the things that they want to accomplish in this world.
Right on. So let me take you from that. I love that overview, Joshua, because I think it really gives people a good sort of, 30,000-foot view of your culture and how you approach this team and how you impact those people and create an environment where they can excel. But it sort of begs the two-step question, I guess, of, well, maybe it's three questions. A, how many people do you have on your team? B, where do you get them? How are you recruiting? How are you attracting people to your team? And then C, as a coach, I'm always really curious. I'm sorry to lay a three-part question on you, but here we go. Right. So the third question is, how do you track, if you have more than two people, you know, you might forget what the number is, what their must is, what the thing is. I'm just a little curious, do you have is there a three-ring binder? Is there an app that you're using? Do you just keep it in Excel? Is it on a sheet of paper? Talk to me a little bit about team and kind of how you attract and manage them.
Okay, yeah. So first question is, how many people do we have on the team? Right now I've got 19 active selling agents on the team currently, and I've got two in training right now. So, you know, that's a team count. Total team count with assistants, everybody, is about 26 people.
Okay.
As far as how we attract and how are we recruiting agents?
Yeah, who do you determine are your targets? Who are the ID? You've learned the hard way, like all of us, right? Oh, that was a bad hire. I don't want to hire that person again. But what have you determined is the right DNA for the perfect person for you to bring on your team, particularly for a selling agent?
Yeah. So we and this is the ongoing battle. I'm still every single day trying to get better and better and better. What I've found, and I believe in just the law of averages and the law of numbers and knowing your numbers. You know, like, for example, when it comes to lead gen, for example, right, your average realtor falls up with a lead three times. Well, communication happens on average on the 15th contact. So nobody's taken enough action to ever make contact. And then once you make communication, you're able to be rejected 5 times before you get a yes, you know. And so people get discouraged and quit going after because they just do not understand the law of averages. Mm-hmm. So, you know, here in Arizona, the most saturated marketplace with realtors is 38,000 realtors here in Phoenix, right?
13,000?
38,000.
Oh, my goodness.
We are so ungodly saturated, right? Your average realtor last year sold 2 homes. There's so many. So if you have 15 realtors joining real estate school today, they all 15 graduate. After 5 years, only 14 of those are going to be left in the business. I'm sorry, only one will be left. 14 are going to drop out. So you just got to understand, you know, you got to understand your numbers. So I've done it all. I've dissed everybody. We went through a 3-4-step interview process to, you know, and what I've discovered, I'm still always trying to get better at this, but as of today, right now, I hire 4, I know 2 are going to stick. It's just how it goes. 50% are going to not make the cut, whether they quit on their own or I have to let them go. Yeah. The other 50% do. So, you know, right now, for example, we're trying to grow at 10 agents a month. We just started about 60 days ago, really, now that we figure, you know, we just feel really, really confident, more confident in our current system than we ever have. So we're trying to retain 10 a month. So I know I need to hire 20.
Awesome.
And that's our current goal. So you got to understand the law of numbers, otherwise you get discouraged. I see so many team leaders that stay small because they're like, well, I the revolving door was just too much. Well, if you just understand that going in and you know what to expect, then at that point you attach yourself 100% to the process, never the outcome. And that's so
important.
Let
me take you back to the gym for a minute because, look, you were a personal trainer. You were a sales guy inside a gym. You very well could have owned a number of gyms. You know, you know that world really big. We are surrounded by, in our country, by people who are out of shape. There's no question about it, right? So, you know, when you brought somebody into the gym, you had to put together a plan of action for them that in the beginning was nothing but pain. And we both know that people either move away from pain or toward pleasure, but they're probably more likely to move toward pleasure. So my question for you is, what lesson did you learn from that physical training, Joshua, that allows you to transition into the instruction of your team and training your team, if any? Is there a direct application there?
Yeah, you know, one thing that always frustrated me in the health club business is, you have a member, let's say that they come up to you and say, hey, you know, this health club has totally changed my life. This is the best thing I've ever done in my life. This is the best, you know, where my marriage is better. I'm healthier. I have better relationships. This is the best thing that has just saved my life, right? Yeah. And then an hour later, you get a member that comes in, cancels their membership that says, oh, you know, I didn't hit any of the results I wanted. You know, this place didn't do it for me,
right.
You know, da-da-da. It wasn't the equipment. It wasn't the gym. It was just 100% the person, right?
Yeah.
The level of action and their commitment. You know, and you got it. There's two types of people out there. There's people that are interested, and then there's people that are committed. Mm-hmm. Very few people are committed, right? Committed is, hey, I don't have a plan B because it dilutes from plan A, right? Burn the ships. I'm going to do what I have to do today, every single day, no matter whether it's difficult or whatever. I'm going to live today like nobody else. So I can live tomorrow like nobody else. Where they're interested, just do it when they want to, or it serves them well, or, you know, and that was just something, you know, you just learned in the health club business. And again, it was just law of averages. If we needed 3,000 members over a period of time, I knew that number. You know, I knew I had to go sign up 4,500 members to get there and to get to my 3,000, retain my 3,000. The thing that I still baffles me every single day, and I still, anymore, I study, you know, human psychology more than I do anything, is how do you get people to take action?
Right.
You know, and I just read an awesome book called Change or Die, right? So, and it's about, you know, it starts off, you got 90% of heart, open heart surgery patients. You know, they go in there, they get their chest cut open. You know, I mean, it's a scary, scary surgery, right? So they go in there, they have open heart surgery, then the doctor will specifically tell them once they're done with the surgery, if you don't change this, you know, and this in your life, you are going to die. You're going to die prematurely. You are going to die. Well, 90%, less than 12 months, all go back to their old habits. You know, you know, people just are not willing, you know, to make that change and do those hard things. So, one, again, you know, all of this, is really the biggest lesson I've learned from all of this. Take the emotions out of it. Never attach yourself to the outcome. Always just fully attach yourself to the process. Focus on the process. Because otherwise, it's so easy to get discouraged and give up, which you can never do. You just got to
totally.
You know, just got to keep pushing harder. And then every time for me, it's just okay. I just got to recruit more. You know, because it doesn't matter how much you coach and where you train them. Obviously, you want to coach and train your people. You know, but coaching and training doesn't always translate into your people being more productive, right? You got to again get them inspired, get them diving into their why, get them. You know, I think the accountability is the piece that's missing from most organizations is there's zero accountability. You know, so as far as how do we attract them, how do we hire them, you know, growth comes within. You know, so we get our people out there talking about them. We create raving fans of our organization. So a lot of our hires come in from internal referrals from cross-sale agents and all of that. But we also advertise heavily. And when I say heavily, it's 2 ads a week on Craigslist. And another company called Indeed. We get a lot of resumes from that. And then, you know, I'm at events. You know, I'm speaking at a lot of events. I speak on a pretty large level to, you know, like, for example, I booked out a movie theater last month and spoke to 240 agents about achieving success in the business. Now, they're all my competition. You know, I don't get paid to do it. One, I'm passionate. I'm extremely passionate about helping realtors achieve success in their business. You know, I'm not a real estate coach. I'm here to grow my own business, but I love helping other people achieve success as well. But then it cures that whole security issue. People get up there and see what you're doing and you're out there giving and they want to be a part of it. You know, it's something that just doesn't exist in the marketplace of what we're doing. You know, the culture, the amount of sharing. The organization that we're creating, it just doesn't exist out there. So people are just attracted to it. So now we're hiring the amount that we're hiring right now. We're going to the point where I cannot do interviews one by one.
Yeah.
So we do group interview sessions.
Yeah.
I do it every single Friday for 3 hours. I'll get 20 people in a room, and we go through a 3-hour session and then have an open Q&A. And it kind of came into it through default. But it ended up being the best thing I've ever done for hiring because, one, people feel more comfortable. Like, okay, it's going to be a group setting.
Yep.
You know, it's not going to be that one-on-one high pressure. And then other people may ask a question that they didn't think of asking. And you know, like we tell everybody, never let anybody sign up right there on the spot. It's like, look, hey, I don't want you here unless you want to be here, unless you leave here and you've got goosebumps. Like, this is what I've been looking for my whole life, my whole career. This is where I need to be. I must be on this, you know, within this organization, on this team. We don't want you. If there's any doubt, don't join. Go home tonight. You know, talk to your spouse, talk to whoever. Let them play devil's advocate. Try to let them talk you out of this. You know, and then after all that, if you still have that burning desire to be here, then we want you. You know, because I, like I said, I've fisked everybody. I've done all of that. And what I found is you got to get that. I don't care what personality style you have or what you are. If you're really committed to your career, your success in real estate and career, you know, committed to your family and success on this, why you live on this planet, and if you have a hardcore why, your personality types are relevant.
Absolutely.
You're going to go out there and have success, and that's just what we're looking for. So.
No, that's good, man. That's really good. And the other thing, of course, you create with the group interview is the dynamic of scarcity. Scarcity creates demand, right? So if I'm one person interviewing for one position, I view it one way. If you've got 20 people in a room and you're hiring two, I view it very differently.
Yeah. You know, and it's not like most brokerages out there that are just begging for agents. It's not a right. It's a privilege to be here. We don't take everybody. And, you know, and we're hardcore with our expectations. Look, you know, we're not a nonprofit. We're not a charity. Here's how we commit to you. Here's what we expect back. There's going to be 2 conversations. And if you let your foot off that accelerator, there's going to be there's going to be 1 conversation with it. The second conversation is you got to go find success elsewhere.
Right.
You know, we only want an environment with 8 players and you know, really hardcore with that. As far as the tracking, we do everything in Google Drive currently.
Nice.
So that way they can see it and update it from their cell phones. They can see it anywhere. We track everything, right? We track.
Yep.
Their appointment set, we can see all the leads coming in. So the next thing that we need to know and that we need to know from the agent is the appointment set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like, for example, I had a gentleman in my office the other day that's not on the team, but he's just needed some help. So he's just giving him some guidance, and his goal this year was to make 180 grand. And I said, okay, what do you need to do? I mean, what do you got to be doing on a monthly basis, a weekly basis, a daily basis? How many phone calls do you need to make? How many appointments do you need to go on? What do you need to do to get that? And he's like, I have no clue. I'm like, okay, well, that's okay. You know, most people don't. You know, I mean, a lot of times the when I hear goals, you know, the response I get above their game plan is work harder, work more hours, be in the office more, be more focused. I'm like, look, I believe you that all those things are going to happen, but if you don't have a game plan, you're not going to hit your goals. You're absolutely going to fail, you know, and it's about having the right work ethic and the right recipe. You know, for example, effort doesn't pay the rent. You know, I don't care how hard you're sprinting. If you're chasing the sunset and you're running east, you're never going to see it. So, you know, we call it a recipe analogy within our organization. It's like, okay, it's 5 o'clock tonight. I'm starving. I'm hungry. I'm going to go home. I don't cook a lot, but I'm going to go home and whip myself up a meal, right? So I grab the pan out. I'm throwing in food, ingredients. I'm going to town. 30 minutes goes by. I'm working hard, but 30 minutes goes by. I taste it. It tastes like crap. I've got a crappy product, you know, a crappy result. However, I took out a proven cookbook with a proven result and followed it to a T. I'd use the same amount of time, energy, effort, food, ingredients, or less, and I'd have a brilliant tasting meal, a brilliant end result at the end. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't think your average agent, you know, here in, I think in the nation closes, what, 4 or 6 deals a year. Right. I don't think it's because your average agent is lazy or if they don't have the recipe. They have no idea. It's like, okay, I just got my real estate license. It's 6 a.m. I got my suit on. Now what the heck do I go out there
right.
and do?
Right.
And that's what, you know, it's never taught this business. You know, it's okay, go start a farm here. You know, okay, great. You know, but if I don't care about making any money for 24 months, okay, cool, I'll go start a farm area. But most agents that I know that get in this business are living paycheck to paycheck. They're like, I need a buyer in my car now that I can put them in escrow in 7 days and get paid now. You know, how do you do that? How do you accomplish that?
And that's so, Joshua, that's, I really want you to go there because that's a great granular question on, especially in your market, right? If we compare Phoenix to the rest of the country, A, and you know this, every place else in the country right now, as we record this interview, the end of March 2014, there is a shortage of inventory every place that I know of, but Phoenix, Arizona, maybe Vegas is the same way, right? So you've got a 6-month supply of inventory. You've got 38,000 realtors, right? There is no more competitive environment. How do you answer that question? What are you having your people focus on, and where are the majority of your leads coming from?
Okay, so and there's multiple questions. Our full focus, right? And it's all about focus.
Yeah.
You know, your average person, for example, you can go out there and work a 14-hour workday and not accomplish crap.
Sure.
You know, because you're so reactive. You got to be fully focused, fully proactive, and fully. You know, I call it your 3 vital signs of real estate. There's 3 vital signs. That, like, for example, if I go to the doctor. Mm-hmm. And for the hospital, first thing you do is check out my vitals, because if those aren't in tune, there's a problem. There's a big red flag. Well, there's 3 vital signs for every realtor that if they're not getting daily focus and daily attention, there's going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, number one is prospecting lead generation, which ultimately is appointment set. You know,
right.
You know, a lot of people sit there and think, oh, we're in the lead generation business. Well, not really. I mean, really, we're in the appointment setting business. I don't care how many leads you get. If you can't
mm-hmm.
set appointments, it's irrelevant. So we're in the appointment setting business. Yeah, you need to generate leads and prospect to get those, but if you can't set appointments, it's irrelevant. So you got to number one, set appointments. Number two, be brilliant when you conduct those appointments. And then number three, negotiate contracts. Outside of those 3 vital signs, those are your only money-making activities in this business, period.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else, now I'm not saying they may not be essential to your business, but they're non-money-making activities.
Yeah.
So we do what's called our sprint and recovery, right? So we break down, you know, 90 minutes. And then we go 60 minutes, and then 90, and then 60, and then 90, and we keep repeating them. So your 90 minutes is your 3 vitals, your money-making activities, non-interrupted time, fully focused, you know, text messages, phone calls, nothing. You're fully proactive. You're never reactive. You know, when you get a text message, that's somebody else's agenda for you. Now you're reactive. You're not being proactive. So, but then you schedule your 60 minutes after that, where you're allowing yourself to be interrupted. That's where you return those text messages, phone calls, you know, all of that. So that's where we're, you know, just a hardcore state of prospect. Like, for example, if you do 3 90-minute sessions a day, that's 4.5 hours a day,
mm-hmm.
your life will your whole entire world will absolutely change.
Oh, without a doubt.
You know,
of a massive action, like you say? Absolutely.
Yep. So I tell them, hey, look, you give me three 90-minute sessions a day, and your world will change, right? So now, as far as our lead generation, we do a lot of different things. Do a lot of internet today. Just Google pay-per-click. We generate about 1,000 leads a month through internet today. Is a sign called a decade ago. If you just think about it, put yourself in the consumer's shoes. If you're going to go look for a house, because you got to understand how the general public thinks of us realtors. They don't like us that much. They don't think very highly of us, right? So they don't want to call the sales guy. Nobody does, right? So now they can just hit up their iPhone, plug in the address to Siri or put it on Google or look it up on an app, mm-hmm. and have everything they want right there in their hand within seconds. So if you don't have a very, very heavy internet presence, make sure you jump on that immediately. Plus, the awesome thing is it's cheap. I generate a lead through Google pay-per-click, $14 a lead. Yep. My cost per deal on the internet is a tenth of what it was when I was doing direct mail, for example. So
right.
That's what's so amazing about social media and internet today, as it's so cheap to do, right? So but that's about it. I mean, we literally it's internet for lead gen.
Yeah.
Everything else. Internet for marketing. Because marketing is what you cut checks for. Prospecting is what you just image
right.
sheer time and hustle muscle, right? So
yep.
I'm a big believer in if you're going to do something, anything worth doing, do brilliantly. I can't stand mediocrity. So, open houses, for example. We take them to, if I'm going to do it anyway, I'm going to take it to a level where everybody's like, holy cow, what the hell is this? I'm going to demand attention, right? I never wait for the road to be paved. I'm going to go out there and then create my own path, right? So,
nice.
Your average agent goes out there for 3 hours, throws up 4 signs. We start planning 2 weeks in advance. We call every single neighbor and private invite them. We flyer the closest 500 homes. We create video. We boost it on Facebook. If the property needs 5 signs, we do 30. I've got a wrapped Hummer that we throw out there. We got 7-foot-tall flags. And we make it look like the craziest circus that you've ever seen, right? We turn it into a huge event. And then what happens here is, for example, a couple of years ago, I used to do a lot of radio and TV.
Yeah.
I quit radio and TV. I spent $35,000 a month on them because I got to the point where I was generating so many more listings through mega open house events than I was at all on TV and radio. That just became more of an ego thing than it was a money-generating thing. Because what's going on now is sellers think one of us realtors. They think realtors are the crap. They think we come up there, we throw a sign in the yard, we take some photos, throw them in the in-laws, get underneath and pray that sells and want to sell, we get paid way too much money. So we want to change the perception. When home sellers drive through the neighborhood and see our open house, and it's like, holy cow, these guys actually hustle hard for their clients. And we get sellers, we had one 2 weeks ago, home seller came right in there, saw that, got on the phone during the open house, fired their agent, and we walked right over to their property and listed their house right there. Because we do them on such a big level, but we'll get 150 people through one open house.
Yeah.
So we have to have multiple agents there. We have to have, 4 agents there to work it and to be effective. But I always go back to, because I think one mistake realtors make, one is they don't journal, they don't track what got them successful. A lot of people, if you ask them, what makes you successful? Or what do you do that makes you successful? If they really dive down, they can't pinpoint it. So I go back to my first year in the business. How did I go out there and have huge success with zero experience and I didn't spend a penny? And it was hardcore mega open houses, calling expireds, and I would go out to Home Depot, I get pamphlets and cards, and every single day until I passed out a certain amount of cards and had a certain conversation, I wouldn't leave. And it was just at the end of the day, we're 100% the relationship business. People are skin, bone, and heart. It's all about relationships. It's about getting in front of people, talking with people. And today it's more important than ever because nobody will do it. So you look at 66% of home buyers go to the first realtor they meet with in person. And today about 72% of home sellers go to the first realtor they meet with. They're only interviewing one realtor. So it's about getting in front of people. And the only way to do that is get out there and get in the general public demand that attention, though. You got to take such massive levels of action because people are attracted to it. People are attracted to high energy. People are taking action.
Oh, big time.
You know,
yeah.
they want to see out there that you're being positive, that you're hustling, and they love it. They're attracted to it.
Totally. So I've got to go back to something that you just revisited, but you said at the top of the call, and you know, you do speak. I think average people talk at about 300 words per minute. I think you're at about 350 with gusts to 375. So somebody might have missed this, but you mentioned going to, was it Lowe's or Home Depot, and I'm going to give out 300 business cards before I can go home to be with my family. Did I hear you correctly?
Yeah. So I used to just set, you know, hardcore commitments for myself. Hey, I'm gonna have this many conversations, and today with recruiting, I don't allow myself to go home and see my family until I've set at least one appointment a day. That's it. Otherwise, I'm sleeping under my desk tonight. I can't go see my kids unless I do that, right? So you just got to be hardcore committed, and then get it done. You set your must, you get hardcore committed, and you figure it out.
Because your why is huge, right?
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So, So you, you just start, everybody's going to be different, but you start tracking your numbers. Okay. So if I talk to, let's say 100 people, or, you know, I approach 100 people, maybe out of that 100, I have 19 conversations. Out of 19 conversations, I set one appointment. Well, my goal is to set one appointment every day. I know exactly what I need to be doing. I know essentially how many no's I need to get my yes.
Nice.
You know, if I'm calling Facebook, let's say for every 10 I call, I get 9 rejections.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I'm never worried about the 9 rejections. I don't care about being rejected.
Right.
I'm actually stoked to get rejected because I know that's that much closer to my yes. So, you know, when somebody rejects me on a for sale by owner, I'm stoked. I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't, you know, thank you for your no. I appreciate it. I understand. You know, I'm going back at them, right? So, because I know, okay, on this sixth no, man, I only need 3 more until I get my yes. You know,
Joshua, you probably know this because he's a local boy for you, but one of your senior statesmen in Phoenix, Scottsdale, I'm pretty sure, is Tommy Hopkins. And 35 years ago, 40 years ago, he was teaching exactly what you just said. Thank you for the no. It gets me closer to the yes. And it was all about sort of eating rejection pie because you reframe it in your mind. And if you reframe it as this is the – you've said it multiple times – the law of averages, time and consistency, know your numbers, then it's not just the rejection that turns you off, turns you down, you want to go home and turn on the TV and open a beer. You know exactly what those numbers are, at least pretty darn close, and this becomes a very predictable process then, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's all about this business can 100% be predictable.
Yeah,
you know,
no
it's
doubt.
Just about tracking everything and knowing your numbers. If there's 2 things I've learned in this business, you need to know your numbers, every number in your business. You need to know it intimately. Number 2 is keep your expenses as low as you possibly can.
Mm.
You know, and then lead with your wallet, right? Because just being honest with this, right, we've made
yep.
those mistakes, and, you know, you can either be rich or famous in this industry. I went trying to be the famous route, and you know, I got my expenses out of control, and it's just about bankrupted myself. I mean, I've had to cash out my life savings. I've had to refi my house. I've had to cash out IRAs just to survive. Thank God I have was in a position to have those. You know, but I've made those mistakes, and those are the 2 biggest things. In my whole career, I was always told those things, you know, but you don't listen, right? It's like you gotta live through the school hard knocks and have it sting enough in your own personal world before it clicks. But it's so crucial. Know your numbers. Know exactly what you need to be doing so this business is predictable. So then every single day, you know, like with everybody on our team, every single day, we actually build out their whole entire calendar every month with them to make sure they're on track to hit their goals. And we do it every single month. Just, you know, just like an airplane, for example, when it's in the air, 85% of the time, the airplane is readjusting its nose due to turbulence. You know, well, turbulence for us is life. Life happens. You get sick, a kid gets sick, something happens, and throws your trajectory off. So we got to refocus every 30 days. So then we get it to the point where it's just work ethic. Look, were you committed or were you lazy? You know, and that's it. There's no guesswork. It's just you do this, you call this person, you know, this, you do this, eliminate all the guesswork.
Right.
You know, and that's what we really track our people on is what's your work ethic. You know, you said your goals are here based on your last 30 days of work ethic, and then we built our own conversion calculator based on our people's conversion ratios. Well, we can spit it out almost to the penny, tell them based on their last 30 days of work ethic what they're on track to make on a monthly and annual basis. And it's like, well, if you told me you want to make 150 grand, but based on your last 30 days of work ethic, you're on track to do 70. You know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting a different result. Something's got to change here. You know, what's it going to be? And it's not always working more hours. It's getting more effective with your time. Mm-hmm. You know, your average person, for example, when you know, they get interrupted every 11 minutes, it takes 7 minutes to recover from each interruption. So your average person is only fully focused and effective for 30 minutes, 20 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. You know, a third of our day workday is wasted through interruptions. So, you know, a lot of times it's just getting them dialed in, which takes so much discipline. It's insane, right? Especially without in today's world with text messages and Facebook. And, you know, you're like, here's something to try. Go read a book for 90 straight minutes during your self-development time without checking one phone call, you know, one voicemail, one text message, Facebook. Just be fully engaged in any task for 90 minutes without checking that. It's so hard.
Well, here's the evidence that doesn't work. Movie theaters have to run multiple commercials before the movie starts telling us to turn our phones off.
Right.
Yeah. And that's about as multimedia entertainment as you can get, man. That's not a book. That's multimedia, you know, Dolby Sound 5.1 coming at you with a 100-foot screen. Come on. And we still want to pull our phones out. So, Josh, a final question for you, man. Somehow we have ended up at the end of this time, and I that's always a great sign of a really good interview to me, and I've been doing this almost 20 years, bud, and you are you're a force of nature, my friend. This has been some serious fun. So here's my question for you. You're primarily focused on buyers right now. You know, this industry has a very unique relationship between mortgage lender and realtor. And, you know, recognize these interviews are, as I said, distributed by mortgage lenders who are, you know, working at either developing a relationship with a realtor or taking an existing relationship up a notch. So in just broad terms, I don't want to know any names, I don't want to know any companies, but just in broad terms, from your perspective, you get into this business, you begin to learn, okay, escrow, title, mortgage, I see how the components work together. Now you've built this machine, 20-some-odd employees and growing, 300-plus units per year, tons of volume. What's most important to you about that relationship with the mortgage lender, the loan originator, boots-on-the-street lender?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a crucial relationship. I mean, it is. You know, my specific lender, you know, I won't share names, but I'll share, you know, ways that we incorporate, we work together. You know, he's absolutely a part of our team. And you got to leverage the tools that everybody has, right? So, for example, our mega open house event, we have our lender there, you know, one of his junior LO partners, right? We have all their information, a credit repair department, you know, all of it, because we have so many buyers out there that don't think they can qualify, don't buy. And then, too, especially when there's 38,000 realtors out here, it's like, hey, how do I differentiate myself from the other 37,999?
Totally.
Well, having that lender there that can answer those questions, that can support them, be there, it is so, so important. And then, you know, for example, one of our big ways of business right now is we advertise very heavily to potential renters. Now, we don't work with renters, but what we do is we find that about 1 out of 10 rental leads that we get qualify to buy, and they can buy less than they can rent for.
Oh, without a doubt.
And then we're able to flip them. We're able to flip them right there. We get them right away with our lender, get them right in the process. You know, but having that. So our lender, one thing that I think every lender needs to have, one thing that one of the tools that I absolutely love about our lender is an amazing credit repair department. They have an awesome credit repair department. They have an awesome follow-up, you know, portion of that where it's free to the consumer. You know, we have people that are in there for 18 months. You know, and they're getting checked up on, and every time they get checked up on, it's, you know, hey, I'm so-and-so with, you know, this lending company. You know, I was just having a conversation with your realtor, and we wanted to follow up to see how you're doing and how are we looking. So they do a great job at joint branding us.
That's great.
You know, and then when that person's ready, so I mean, every single month right now, I'm getting, you know, 5-6+ buyers that have been in the system for years that we're able to divvy out to our people. So it's always about, you know, because you got to think, I mean, yeah, that now buyer's great and the now seller's great, but I plan on being in this business till the day I die, so I need clients. And you know, 6 months and 5 years and whatever else. So I don't care when they buy, as long as they buy, right? So let's get them in the pipe. Let's get them going. Let's get in there. And then also, you know, you use that. It's so important to know at what point to get your buyer with the lender.
Right.
You know, because we want to make this become a reality for the potential buyer. A lot of potential buyers are just browsing, just looking at, you know, they think that this is just a possibility, maybe not a real reality in their head. Well, the second we start communicating, we're doing everything we can to get them with our lender. I mean, we want that process to happen. You know, of course, we're always trying to get appointments, but that's usually, you know, the first step. The second communication happens, we want to put them in there, because once they know that and then it becomes a reality in their head, we know our conversion ratio and our success ratio with that customer is going to be so much greater.
Sure.
So yeah, all of those relationships are so ungodly important.
Great.
Plus, we want to have with people that are in our corner, right? It's I want to lend that note to get the job done. Same thing with escrow. The partnership's just huge.
Well, and that's the word that was the word that just kept occurring to me as you were describing. This is a true partnership. You hear that a lot. That's like saying, you know, our company is like family. People throw that around a lot. But what that really means is, when it's a true partnership, that means, like you said, they're invested with you. They're following up with these leads. They're improving the quality of that buyer or making them a viable buyer. They're showing up at, or having another team member show up in an open house with you. That's a true commitment to partnership. That's a beautiful answer. So Joshua, people are going to have questions for you. You're a busy guy, and I want to set them up for the reality that you may or may not be able to get back to them. So maybe it's a phone call if it's a direct referral or something really major, but it's probably going to be email. Maybe it's social media. What's the best way to have somebody reach out to you?
So I actually I've created an email that's just for the real estate community, where I spend about an hour every single day in there returning inquiries, and I'm happy to help any way I can. Again, one of my true passions is helping realtors all over the globe build their real estate business. You know, so I've got a email that's joshua@joshuasmithkeepingitreal.com. So again, joshua@joshuasmithkeepingitreal.com. Just be patient with me sometimes, because I do get about 40 to 50 inquiries a day, so sometimes it takes about a week to get back to you, but I promise I personally respond to every single one of them. I will get back to you. You can Facebook me, and then I have a YouTube channel, which is, you just type in Joshua Smith AZ. 90% of the content on there, if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, is content giving back to realtors. So you can check that out. Got a lot of content on there from our open house. Just keep everybody clear on everything that we're doing. So
awesome.
Feel free to reach out. Any question, anything that you need, I'm happy to help any way I possibly can.
Well, Joshua, I think a lot of people right now are worn out and tired, and they're going to have to go have a protein shake, because you wear people out. Buddy, you are truly a force of nature. I love your abundance mentality. I love the way that you approach this business with gusto, and you just absolutely are changing the way that real estate is done. So as a guy who's been in this business almost 30 years, I'm really proud of what you're doing, man. I'm really proud of what you're doing, and I want to thank you for making the time to be with us today, and I look forward to connecting with you soon virtually, as we're doing on social media.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be on your show, and I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, brother. Take care, man.
You too.
Wow. What an interview, right? Massive action. That's the way that Joshua Smith puts it. I just think that this interview, it could probably be broken down into like five separate components, each one of them studied for days. But there are just some beautiful, simple truths here that, if applied, can have a tremendous impact on your business and your life. So I'm going to encourage you to sit down with the individual that brought you this interview, have a conversation about the one thing that had the biggest impact on you, and how, if implemented with their help, you could see positive results in the next 30 days. Until next month, this is Bill Hart. Make it a great day.